cities within cities, scientifically planned and built, where a man and his family with a small income can live with comfort and dignity, where there are playgrounds and space for the kids to stretch their growing limbs right outside the front door.
Newsflash, it's 2025, and we're still working toward that American dream. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. This week on State Street, a well-paying job, home ownership, and a family, if you want one, that is, sounds pretty awesome.
That does sound like a pretty good dream.
But is that American dream even possible? And now that the 2025 session is underway, what is Utah trying to do about it? Could there be, now hear me out, the Utah dream?
Say more. Take me on this ride that is the Utah of tomorrow.
Well, step aboard the front runner for your tour through the future.
Of course. We love public transpo.
On our left, we have an affordable single-family starter home, complete with walkable neighborhoods and easy access to transit to get to your well-paying job in your city center. And look at the Garcias over there.
Hey, Garcias.
They're a family of five enjoying life in their planned Utah community with its focus on family. They're having thriving relationships with others close by. They volunteer and are active members of their community. And look at their oldest. Little Timmy Garcia is going to a well-funded school, one that will prepare him for all the curveballs life throws. When he's ready, he'll have the option of going to an affordable college or going to a trade school. Either way, he'll be a valuable member of the Utah workforce.
But what if he wants to be a British literature major?
Well, we'll hear more about the legislature's plans for higher education in another episode of State Street. Please keep your hands, feet, and brains in the ride, Sage.
Sorry, I'm a wild one who can't sit still.
And if you look to your right, you'll see all of Utah's major professional sports leagues, soccer, hockey, basketball, volleyball, and the newest Major League Baseball team. And look, what's that in the distance? It's the Olympic rings coming towards us. Are those tech sector CEOs jumping through them?
So funny.
Now, you might be asking, how on earth are we powering all of this? Well, that energy comes from right here in Utah. It's geothermal, it's fossil fuels, and it's also nuclear. All right, Sage, the Utah of Tomorrow ride is coming to an end. If you exit this way, you'll head straight through the gift shop. Don't forget your beehive mug on the way out.
This vision is incredible. Almost makes me wish I was living it now. Transit, affordability, reliability. You have the trifecta.
It really goes hand in hand with that American dream idea we all know. This is the vision Utah leaders have been championing for a long time. They're pushing for Utah to be an aspirational place, a hub of ideas. It's a big part of why they want things like new sports teams and the Olympics. They want to bring the world here and show them, hey guys, we've got some good stuff going on. But they say they don't want to push out regular people or increase the gap between the ultra wealthy and the poor. And it came up first thing, day one of the legislature. Here's what Senate President Stuart Adams had to say in his opening speech.
The Utah dream is rooted in values that we all hold dear, like hard work, community, family, innovation, and opportunity, where every child and family and community have a chance to grow and achieve and prosper and use the principles of personal freedom, responsibility, and collective good.
This idea of the Utah dream is coloring a lot of policy we're expecting from the legislature this year. And this isn't a new goal. Some of this work has already started. When I was watching the opening remarks in the House, Speaker Mike Schultz told us a story about a young couple he got to know. They were expecting their first kid and were beginning to think home ownership was out of reach until the legislature created the Utah First Time Homebuyer Program in 2023.
Today, they're proud owners of a single-family home, a place where they'll raise their children and, more importantly, build their future. Home ownership is one of the top concerns for Utahns.
Aw, a happy ending. But it also sounds like Schultz is a little worried. So was Senate President Stuart Adams when I listened into his speech. And I kind of want to gut check us here, too. I don't want to throw too many numbers at you, but I also probably don't have to. If you're living in Utah, you know what I'm talking about. You've probably felt at least some of this. Housing has way outpaced wages, and rents in the most populous parts of the state have gone up in the last 5 years more than in the previous 20 combined.
For all of this stuff that gives people pause, we have some good stuff going on here, too. People are rah-rah about Utah all the time, like Governor Cox in his State of the State address just last week. We heard a lot of the same kind of vision.
Generations of Utah entrepreneurs and leaders have fought through unfavorable conditions and built in the face of cynicism. In time, those efforts turned Utah into what's now known as the best state in the country to start a business, the number one state for social mobility, the state where young people can still out-earn the prior generation, and the number one state overall. In short, the place where the American dream still means something.
So, there's lots to be optimistic about. There's good and bad here. To wrap our heads around all that, we talked to an economist who thinks about this literally all the time. We'll hear from him after this break.
You're listening to State Street.
Every weekday, KUER brings you fresh coverage of local stories breaking and developing across Utah. Utah News Now is a podcast that publishes twice a day, Monday through Friday. It has all the latest headlines and stories from KUER's newsroom. Find the latest episode of Utah News Now at KUER.org or wherever you download and listen to podcasts.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. So, the Utah dream, it can be a little hard to put a finger on. How do we measure it? How will we know if we achieved this elusive dream state leaders are so eager to make happen?
For that, we recruited Phil Dean. He's the chief economist for the University of Utah's Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute. Phil and the rest of the folks at the Policy Institute are also responsible for a ton of data sets, reports, and expert panels on everything from the state of Utah's housing market to how much our tech sector drives our economy to the possible impacts of the 2034 Olympics. Their work helps inform decisions made on Capitol Hill all the time. I sat down with Phil to get a grip on this idea of the Utah dream and what we can do to make it a reality and whether we're doing anything that could get us off track. Phil Dean, thank you for joining State Street. Appreciate you being here.
It's great to be here.
State leaders clearly have a vision of what the state should look like in their eyes. If there was an amusement park with a Utah of Tomorrow exhibit, what would you want to see in it?
So I'll maybe start with this. It would have a thriving middle class, and that's where I think our greatest challenge. So certainly housing is a major part of that. We have to have affordable housing. We need to have good jobs. So, you know, for a long time, we had really affordable housing, but we didn't have good jobs. It would definitely have mobility. It would have choice and opportunities. So people have a lot of different tastes out there, a lot of different things that they want to accomplish from a housing standpoint, from a job standpoint. And we kind of need this full array of options out there so that people can choose what fits best for them. So for a lot of people, they need a one-bedroom condo. Like, that's all they need. They don't need a big house. But then we might have a family of six or seven, and they do need a big house. And they we need to have options for both of those. But to me, it all boils down where I worry about it from a societal standpoint is the middle class and maintaining a healthy middle class. As you look at different studies nationally that have looked at Utah, we have one of the healthiest, if not the healthiest, middle class, and that contributes to our economic success, to our societal success. And I worry that housing and other challenges can lead to us losing that.
thinking back to when you yourself were fresh out of undergrad at BYU, how did you feel about your life and your career prospects at that time? Did you feel that the life you wanted was achievable for you?
Coming out of school in the 90s, I was worried about jobs. There were jobs, but Utah wasn't necessarily the best place. I was worried about housing. Housing prices had gone up a lot by the time I graduated. And so I was worried about it. But at the same time, I didn't feel like it was unattainable. I just felt like in a lot of ways it would be a pretty big stretch. But I also really did think, well, if I work hard and I kind of do the right things, I think I'll probably end up okay.
How does that compare to what you're seeing and what you're observing now for people who are maybe your kids' age?
So part of this is normal life cycle, right? That you finish school or you graduate from high school and get a technical degree or technical training and go into the workforce. And you start off at lower wages. Then over time, you're able to build up your wages and you're able to buy a home and do other things. But I do think what we're dealing with now is beyond that. So I do have three kids that are in their 20s right now and kind of in that stage, out on their own, trying to figure out, oh, it's really expensive to live. How am I going to do anything else besides pay for rent? Or how am I eventually going to be able to buy a home here in Utah with the wages that I see are out there that employers are offering? And there's a really big mismatch, right, for a new buyer coming into the market. And this is, I think, part of the challenge that we have as a state is those of us that have been here for a while, we don't feel it in the same way as young people do. I think we feel it through our kids, but housing is affordable to us. You know, for me, I bought my home 20 years ago, so it's, I don't have to pay today's prices. I couldn't buy my home at today's prices. And so that's my concern that we have to figure out as a state, this mismatch between what we pay in wages and what our housing prices are. And that's where I worry about this, especially from a generational standpoint.
We're seeing maybe some nervousness from legislative leaders about the viability of this dream we're talking about at the beginning of this session. What's your temperature on how lawmakers are thinking about this?
Well, I think they very much recognize that it's a challenge for us. I think they're still grappling with exactly how to do that, because there has been historically a lot of deference to local government and local government decision-making, and it honestly feels a bit awkward for them, for the ones I've talked with, of intervening. And then at the same time, it is a challenge that's bigger than any one municipality, right? It's this broader regional and even statewide challenge. And, you know, one of the things I go back to is this isn't only an issue for Utah. You've seen home prices go up throughout the country.
With that said, where do these answers to these pressing issues need to come from?
Yeah, I think it needs to come from all of us. And that's the hard thing in all of this. I think it's really easy to point the finger. The local government saying, state, you need to do this. And the state saying, local governments, you need to do this. Businesses saying, you need to do this. We all need to own this problem. It's something that I think we have to solve collectively. And I don't think there's one single silver bullet that's going to solve the challenges that we have. But to me, a starting point is just recognizing that we're in a different situation than we've been. We're kind of, you know, we look here in Salt Lake County, for example, we're largely built out, right? We don't have a lot of room to keep expanding out like we've done historically. There's a little bit, you know, in the southwest and northwest parts of the county, but we're very close to being built out. So now we have to start building up. And that's where the friction comes, because people have seen, I think, housing problems that have done a pretty poor job in overall planning and density that's not well done, not well aligned with transportation or other infrastructure. And so you have all these negative consequences from it. And that's where I think it does take all levels of government and the private sector kind of thinking about how we design our work lives, our home lives, how those interact with each other, thinking about transportation planning that involves both the state and local governments, businesses thinking about new ways to do things so that housing can be more affordable, that we don't have to construct a home in the same way we've always constructed a home, and not insisting on building the big homes.
If things stay status quo, if local government, private sector, state government can't swim in the same direction on this. Where could we be in 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, we hollow out the middle class. That's what happens over time. Now, over a 5-year period, I think we're still okay, right? I think there are enough people coming in with enough wealth from California or whatever other places. Like, I don't think we're going to see this collapse take place. But 10 years, 20 years down the road, that's where, you know, it's kind of a gradual thing as the middle class shrinks. That's where I think we have more of the challenges. And I hope we don't, as a state, wait until there's a crisis. You know, if you deal with these issues early on, they're a lot easier to manage. So I look at what I think may be the beginning. It's still early in this, so I don't want to, like, overstate what happens. But you look back over several decades, we've actually grown faster than the U.S. in terms of job growth rate, and pretty consistently. And you look over the last several years as our housing prices have been a lot higher than the rest of the U.S., and that is not the case anymore. We're only at about a little above half of our historical job growth rates. So we're definitely seeing a slowing in job growth rates. Like, I think of the chickens coming home to roost, that analogy, I think we're seeing some of that already. And, you know, we're used to growth, and so much of what we think about what we want to do from an infrastructure standpoint. What if we don't have any money to pay for that because we have a lot slower growth all of a sudden, and growth isn't going to fund all of these things that we thought it was going to fund? How are we going to be able to manage that?
Looking ahead to 2034, literally the entire world will be coming to Utah for the Winter Olympics. Does that give us a good deadline for a lot of this? I'm a reporter. I love a good deadline. Yeah. Is it good for the state to have a deadline?
Yeah, I think it definitely gives us an opportunity to kind of focus in some ways. Sometimes it'd be nice if we didn't have to have a deadline, right? So, I teach class, and it's amazing when you give a deadline, like, stuff gets done. You know, I don't see a lot of paper submissions from students like weeks and weeks before the deadline. It turns out it comes at the deadline. It's probably only for my class. Students don't do that anywhere else, I'm pretty sure.
We should take a poll of University of Utah professors to see if that's true.
But, you know, a deadline is helpful, and I do think it can help provide some focus. I think I'll just finish with this. Like, I am very optimistic about the future of the state. We definitely have challenges that are out there, but I also think at this point they're manageable challenges. And if people of goodwill come together, that we can work through these issues. I worry if we don't do anything for 10 or 20 or 30 years, all of a sudden we are going to be in a lot of challenges that are much more difficult to get out of. But I am optimistic that we can continue to make incremental improvement year after year after year. And if we, like, have the drive to do that, I think we're okay. We're in a manageable situation still. But it's, to me, I think it's really important to act early and do it now instead of keep putting off this challenge.
Phil Dean, thank you so much.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
That was Phil Dean, chief economist at the University of Utah's Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute. So what is the legislature planning to do about all of this?
Like we said, this vision of the Utah dream is going to color a lot of what we'll see from lawmakers this session, from housing to energy to tax policy.
These policy goals can sometimes pit certain priorities against each other, too, like how Governor Cox wants to eliminate taxes on Social Security, but Adams wants to prioritize cuts that would help more young families. Adams said last week that you just can't make everybody happy.
Policymaking to achieve this idyllic future can feel like a tightrope walk. You heard it from Phil Dean. So much of this hinges on housing. And the lines are blurred for who should lead the charge. Here are a couple things I've got my eye on. There's a bill that would make it easier to build accessory dwelling units. Salt Lake City already has some policy that allows this, but this would make some of these changes a little bit more statewide. We may also see measures to make building condos easier, and maybe some increased funding for state programs that have been around for a few years, like that first-time homebuyer program.
Really quick, Sean, tell me what an accessory dwelling unit is.
That's like a mother-in-law apartment, or if you build a bedroom above your garage.
So it's like extra housing in a house.
Basically.
Perfect. Okay, well, that's all fine and dandy, and I think focusing on home ownership is cool, but one-third of Utahns are renters. And have you seen the price in rent? The vast majority are simply priced out of the market now. While it's still early in the session, I haven't seen much legislation around renters. But we also know the Republican supermajority historically hasn't had an appetite to address renters. We did like a whole series on Utah renters at KUER last summer.
I totally hear that. Big picture, the economy is doing well, but people aren't always feeling that in their day-to-day.
Tell me about it. We saw that dynamic play out big time in the 2024 election. Also, Sean, have you seen the price of eggs?
Costco has been out of stock for weeks now.
$10 for a dozen eggs at Smith's. Part of why we have a new president. And I have to wonder if this moment of national transition is having ripple effects on the Utah legislature.
Yeah, it's kind of weirdly quiet. The mood has been pretty different in the very first days compared to previous years. Week one is in the books, and we just didn't see the same push to get big headline-grabbing bills through in the first few days. That's a strategy we've seen in the last two sessions. Think of things like DEI or transgender bathrooms. But there are some big bills starting to chug their way through.
Bit of a slow burn. They waited all the way until day three. The ball is moving on a few things we're keeping an eye on, like public employee workers' rights. And back again, constitutional amendments. And for the fourth year in a row, lawmakers are taking up transgender rights, this time where they can live inside of a college dorm. Stay tuned. That does it for this episode of State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins.
Don't forget, if you want to be the smartest and funniest person in your friend group, sign up for our State Street newsletter. Stay on top of the latest legislative news and laugh at our witty observations of life on Capitol Hill. You can find a sign-up link at our website.
We say this all the time, but it is true. We could not put State Street together without a team of help. Our digital crew is Jim Hill, Raquel Davis, and Eleanor Gottberg.
David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark are responsible for editing and audio production here at State Street.
And Caroline Ballard is our executive producer.
See you next week.
This is surprisingly hard without headphones. I don't know what it is.
Apparently, it might be working for you because your energy sounds great.
Oh, cool.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
And your read is really good.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, well, now don't let it go to your head.
From KUER.